Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answers. I'm your host, Dr. Ronit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and still practices on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. To grow this community of information and action, I hope you give us a five-star review. Come visit me on hightruths.com to learn more about the show or download a free prescription for naloxone. Carrying naloxone for drugs is like carrying an EpiPen for allergies. Today's episode is sponsored by Families Against Fentanyl. FAF is an organization set on attacking the supply chain of deadly illicit fentanyl. To learn more, visit familiesagainstfentanyl.org and sign their petition to declare illicit fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. Hello again, High Truth listeners. Get ready for a growing up conversation. I'm your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. Growing up, as in human development from pregnancy to adulthood, we have only one chance to grow up. We get only one brain, one body. We need to take very good care of it. Warren Buffett, the famous billionaire, spoke at the 2002 Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting about what he advised students. He said, imagine that when you are 16 years old, a genie appears and offers to buy you any car you want, any car in the world. But there's a catch. It's the only car you'll ever have in your entire life. Naturally, you'll pick the car of your dreams. And because it's the only car you'll ever own, you would take incredibly good care of it. You'd read the manual carefully. You'd garage it, change the oil regularly, fix dents immediately, and baby it in every way because you know you're stuck with it forever. Buffett then says, you only get one body and one mind for your whole life. Yet most people don't take care of them with anywhere near the same level of diligence. We get only one brain, and we need to teach kids to protect it from pregnancy until the brain finishes development at age 25 to 27. To learn more about the organization One Chance to Grow Up, I reached out to Julie Dreifalt. Julie Dreifalt is a nationally recognized expert and speaker for One Chance to Grow Up, where she educates communities about the dangers of today's high-potency THC, marijuana, and hemp products that poses risks to children and teens. To learn more about Julie Dreifalt and One Chance to Grow Up, check out the High Truth show notes. I recorded this conversation with Julie on June 27th, 2025. Julie Dreifalt, welcome to High Truths.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here with you today, Dr. Love.
I'm excited for a conversation of One Chance to Grow Up. I absolutely love that name. It's just targeted right on to where the problem is. But let's start with your path. Julie, how did you come about to work on the issue of prevention?
Well, I had probably more zigs than zags, to be honest. It was a very interesting path. I started out my career working at a bookstore where David Letterman was my customer.
How cool.
So random back east. And then I decided to get into sales. So I moved to New York City and was in the fashion business for 4 years. And it taught me how to deal with very difficult people, to be honest. And then we moved to Denver, Colorado. And I resumed my sales and did many different things. And decided to have 3 children, which kept me very busy and off the corporate ladder for a couple years, so to speak. And then I decided to go back to work, and I worked at a church in children's ministry, and that fulfilled my heart. I love children. I always have. I think I started babysitting when I was 11, and I loved working with children and families. And that was very meaningful. And I did that for 10 years. And then I decided to go back into sales, and that fell completely flat. Because I'd been doing something that mattered for so many years, and selling knickknacks and dog bones was not filling my heart and feeling that I was doing anything. So I had been familiar with One Chance to Grow Up over the years and gone to several of their events and got connected and was hired on in 2018. And it's been very life-filling for me personally, and just feel like I'm doing something that matters and meeting amazing parents and kids and just really empowering adults to take care of our kids in our life in regards to THC.
That's great. So let's talk about One Chance to Grow Up. What a great name. I always think about that we need to protect our brain. And I love the Warren Buffett story that I shared with the audience, how he emphasized we only have, one brain. That's it. We got to take care of it. One brain, one body. But tell me about the organization.
Absolutely. So we started out, so let me just go back a little bit to give you some longitude about the product. And so Colorado was the first state to legalize, commercialize marijuana in 2012. It had been medical use since 2000, but there was not a big commercial market. So it was between us and Oregon. I think we were 6 months differentiation, but we were the first. So our co-founders, which are still, I think all of them are still with us, with our organization, which is amazing. They were invited by then Governor Hickenlooper to become part of a task force to figure out this new legalized industry. And it became abundantly clear and very quickly that the ease of the consumer and the taxation structure were literally top priority, and protection of kids and community were ranked dead last. So at that moment, our mandate was set, and we created an organization called Smart Colorado to protect kids in Colorado. So that was had in 2012, and then we just went to the races, and as my executive director, Henny Lassie, likes to say, we kind of built the plane while we were flying it, because no one knew anything. There was very little science. There was no policy. So we dove in. And some of it was common sense when it was for, and unfortunately, some of it was dictated by tragedies that happened. Richard Kirk was a father that took an edible soon after it was legalized, and he had never done any marijuana, took a whole edible. So there was no potency limits on that and no serving size on it. And he shot his wife in front of his children. So that was very, unfortunate circumstances really helped us create policy. At one point early on in the process, people were buying Costco rainbow belts.
What happened to him, the guy who shot his wife?
He's in jail still. Yeah, and he blames 100% that THC was responsible for that. And to be honest, that goes in line with some other things, but they didn't know about cannabis-induced psychosis at that point. They just thought it was a problematic. There was a young man from the Congo who was an exchange student at University of Wyoming and came to Denver for a fun weekend and took several edibles and jumped off a parking garage.
Yeah, I think he was the very first casualty. Yes.
So those really helped induce policy. So that helped us have a narrative to change some of these policymakers thinking it was, quote, just pot. So that really helped us understand that situation. So so then we became One Chance to Grow Up in 2020. And we worked on about 40 pieces of legislation across the country. We have over 11,000 supporters in our database, and people from all over the country, every single state's represented, several international people. And we just share the information. We call ourselves River Livers because we want to share the information. We don't care who gets the credit. We just want to protect kids and educate parents and trusted adults.
So is this just a fight against marijuana?
Dr. Love, we are not anti-legalization. We don't get into the politics of that because once the voters have voted, that's their decision, and we don't go into that. We just try to help regulate the products and help policymakers understand that it does need safeguards for youth, and it does need boundaries and guidelines and bumpers, so to speak, because it is not just a benign substance for our adolescent brains.
Right. And do you just talk about marijuana, or are there other products?
Well, funny you ask that. So I was just pulling up some information. We just started getting into psilocybin because we've been in THC and we've been reprimanded and encouraged in every which way you could think about it to get into other substances. Because when the opiate crisis hit, people, poo-pooed us, like opiates are much more important than THC, or alcohol's bad for the adolescent brain. Well, there's a lot of substances bad for the adolescent brain, but there's a lot of people doing other things. So we were unique in our niche with THC. And to be honest, really after helping states after it was legalized. But last year, or 2023, psilocybin was decriminalized here in Colorado, and it was going to be sold in through natural medicine division, which irritates me because nothing's natural and it's not medicine.
There's you know, I gotta tell you, as a doctor, I mean, how dare they hijack the name medicine? I mean, there are standards of care that you have to follow for something to be called a medicine, and this, you know, illicit industry hijacked that, and then I think it's been damaging to medicine, to real medicine.
Absolutely. I don't want to go off the rails here, but I just spoke to 80 children or young adults in Texas yesterday, and a lot of them said, well, people should have their medicine. So I clarified with them. It is not a dosing. It is not, I mean, it's like somebody saying, go have 3 beers and feel better in the morning. Like, it, there's nothing.
Yeah, I don't like it when people saying, well, I used it as my, you know, people use fentanyl as their medicine and heroin and crack too. They shouldn't use that word.
Absolutely. So going back, so we got into psilocybin last summer because what all of a sudden we found out that they were going to put psilocybin into candy. So we said, that's ridiculous. Somebody has to be protecting kids. And we were waiting for other organizations or, to be honest, our state health department to step up, and no one did. So we have gotten involved in the psilocybin talk, and there's other substances that are coming down the pike here in Colorado and other states. But again, it's just education. And we are interested in talking about the connection between THC and opiates. Because there is a direct correlation. So the opiate money that's coming through all our states, there's an opportunity for a lot of organizations to educate on that.
Wow, that's good to hear, because one of the things that I don't think is really promoted or people realize is exactly what you're saying. If you look at everybody today who's overdosed on fentanyl, they didn't start with fentanyl. Most of them, the overwhelming majority, started with marijuana.
And I've talked to kids in addiction. We work with a recovery high school, and anecdotally, all of them said they started with marijuana, alcohol. And then there are several studies that say there's strong associations with youth use of THC at the age of 14 to opiate use at 19. So upstream.
I mean, and it's what we see. Right. I mean,
we see it all the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's the kind of statistics data that we need to promote so people can make informed decisions, exactly what you're saying. Wow. So you talk about THC. I'm sure you talk about the hemp because that's connected. Psychedelics. Anything else specifically?
No, and we are diving in deep with the hemp because we feel THC is THC is THC. And I feel really, I mean, I feel badly for the states that have all these crazy hemp products, potencies. I just did some due diligence. Like I said, I spoke in Texas. There's 7,000, quote, dispensaries or outlets for hemp in Texas. And not one voter voted for that. So it was a loophole that just happened, and this industry has blown up into a multi-billion dollar industry. So shutting it down has become not a public health issue, as you know. It's become just financial. Like, it might be too big to shut down. So, we've been dealing a lot with some Texas work. So we feel that there might be a great way to move the needle with hemp because it is THC.
Yeah. And nothing else. So far, those kind of subject products, that basically the new products are being commercialized and endangering children.
Correct. So that's kind of that lens that we go with. So it's been THC and psilocybin now has a regulated market, not a commercialized market, but that could be coming. And to be honest, we see some of the same players, and it's the same message.
No, and it's the same playbook. Oh, it's my medicine. It's the same playbook, which was very successful, and same marketing strategy. Let's make it a medicine, then let's legalize it, and let's make it available for everybody. Let's get a sob story of one person who anecdotally benefited for that, and so let's now spread it around the whole country instead of dividing the conversation. If something's a medicine, and there are therapeutic value of THC, of psilocybin, but let that go. The traditional medical way of FDA regulation, dosages, contamination. I mean, there's a path. Right. We agree with that path.
Like Epidiolex, right.
There's a path for that. But to mix it up and muddy the water and blur the conversation between, you know, medical and recreational. Now everybody should be able to have their medicine. That's where.
Correct. And the only thing the medical market looks different here in Colorado is you can buy higher potency edibles, and you can buy more of it. That's really the only thing. The products are
Right. So just don't even call in medicine.
And our poor kids have heard that message. I mean, for the last 10 years in many of our states, that it's medicine. They see the Green Cross. What does a Green Cross appeal? It's a safe place. You know, it's natural. It's organic. They've heard so many false messages that have been detrimental.
Yeah. I think that that's a message to be corrected. Now, going with the name One Chance to Grow Up, do you have like an age range, or, you know, or is it the science age of the brain, which is, you know, 25 for my children, 27.
That's what I told the kids yesterday. You know, for boys, it's 27 to 28, right? Is that accurate?
Yeah. You know, everybody's a little different, but yeah, you want to give it the best chance, right? I mean, how tall do you want to be? You want to give it to the last, if you were told 18 or 19, you know, wouldn't you want to let it?
Well, that's a great analogy. I love that. Well, we do. So we deal with adolescents, and so under 21, although we feel, I mean, you know, it's hard for us to do anything legally that under the age of 25, but that is what the message that we do share with.
I think you should stick that. I mean, let the lawyers say 21 because they're lawyers. But if you're doing public health and medicine, it's 25, 28, right?
And these kids get one chance. Like we said, I mean, narrative. And they have one brain, like Warren Buffett said.
I love the name.
That was one of the co-founders' name. And she was like, I think we need to tie it into this is it. And it's also missed potential. I think that's something that, you know, you may not go off the rails completely. You may not develop cannabis-induced psychosis, but you may be really stuck. Anecdotally, I've talked to so many people that like, oh, my brother, you know, use on the low potency stuff. And he's just perpetually a 15-year-old, even though he's 50, he can't hold a job. He can't, you know, his relationships are a struggle. So I just feel like, you know, we have this opportunity. So delay is also a message. And somebody recently told me, I thought this was really interesting. It wasn't just about the brain development. It was the decisions you're making in that, you know, that 15 to 25 year old, making big decisions. You're making your college decisions, your career decisions, potentially your life partner. You might be having children. Like, those are big decisions, and you want to not be impaired when you're creating your life path.
Yeah, absolutely true. So One Chance to Grow Up, is it just Colorado?
No, that's a great question. So that's one of the reasons we changed our name from Smart Colorado, because we were getting calls, because at that point in like 2018 to 2020, so many states were starting to legalize adult use. And I don't call it recreational because I think there's so many other things to recreate. Like I hike and play tennis and read books, and doing drugs is not recreational. So we call it adult use. So, but so many were legalized. And so we were getting calls literally every month, like, how do I help us in Michigan? Can you help us figure this out? And so we decided to change our name, and we've done a lot of work nationally. And our work in Colorado still is very significant, because Denver, of all places, and Colorado still remain like the epicenter of regulation and policy for that. So, but the one thing I do want to point out is that we tried to help a group in South Dakota a couple years ago, and it failed. Like, we've been very successful on a lot of policy work. We went to South Dakota at one of the legislators asked us to come, but they had no data because it was not legal. So data is super important to get policy done. And they also had no boots on the ground, and they also didn't have any lost lives. So those three things, I mean, the impacts are really, when you don't have impacts, people think it's going to be fine. And I heard two people testify, we're going to legislate this better than Colorado. And they didn't. So we'll see. But you definitely need local grassroots efforts to get things done. So we are happy to partner with anyone in any community. And we have done that, and that's been successful.
That's one thing that I think Colorado did right in the legalization, is that they insisted on the data. And the data, Colorado, not everywhere. Like, on one hand, I was able to access the, you know, the mortality data, suicide data, and by age and by drugs and things like that. On the other hand, if you go to, I think, you know, local emergency departments, they've taken out THC from their drug screen on purpose.
It would be half the people probably. No.
Right. Which means that less ability to, you know, confirmed diagnosis of cannabis hyperemesis syndrome and things like that. But what are the data points, when, since you've emphasized that as a key thing, somebody who died, data, and boots on the ground, what data should states and maybe the federal government be collecting?
Well, I think we, with a bill that we worked on with several other coalition partners, was Bill 1317 in 2021, which was a groundbreaking bill. It was really the first bill of its kind of tap the brakes of this THC industry. So that bill did many things, but one of the more significant things is got toxicology results from any unnatural death under the age of 25. So that's been very helpful for us to see that. And it's gotten ER information, which has been lagging, to be honest. And we are a gentle nudge to our legislators and to the health departments here in Colorado to make sure that is available to the public. So I think suicide data, especially in the adolescent age, I mean, THC is the number one substance found, and you know this, in our 10 to 18 year olds in Colorado, almost twice as much in alcohol. And those numbers are significantly higher in the Black and brown, especially the young men. So that is something that we need to figure out what's going on and how are those communities being targeted, and why is some of this affecting our young men differently than our females? So I think that's really interesting. And also we've tried to get violence, because Dr. Libby Stout has done a lot of research on the violence and THC. And that information's hard to gather. It really is hard to gather. We've had several people trying to get that. So murder is not included in the unnatural deaths, even though it is pretty unnatural.
All right. So you're not just Colorado.
Our Healthy Kids Colorado. Sorry. I wanted to say that. Our Healthy Kids Colorado survey, we've helped change some of those questions as well. We don't have more real estate on that, but we have more, like, we now have added vaping, because it used to be just smoking marijuana. And we know now that most kids are vaping it, eating it, and smoking less. So I think just working with your state health departments or your schools and just trying to find out what are the questions that are being asked, and make sure that they're really influential in potential policy work.
That's great. All right. So you're not just Colorado, you're nationwide, THC, psychedelics, any new drugs that may be coming around that are potentially harmful to the one chance to grow up brain. And are you partisan? Is this a red or blue issue?
Absolutely. We are a nonprofit, nonpartisan. We have people in our organization as supporters that have voted for legalization. I think a lot of people thought initially it was voting for a blunt or to decriminalize it and no one should be arrested for it, which we completely agree with. But I don't think a lot of people really understood. And a physician just said that last week. They said, we don't think we were voting for, you know, gummies or inhalers or, you know, rectal suppositories that have THC in it. The market has exploded. So I think there's a big confusion on that. So we just help out wherever we can. I'm going to Florida next week. I was in Texas a couple days ago. I'm speaking at the National Latino Behavioral Health Conference. So really trying to help people on the national front as well. So,
That's great. And you also have a youth council, which is intriguing. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we have these young adults, and they're between the ages of 15 and 18, that really give us guidance on, to be honest, if our messaging is on point, because, you know, we think, well, I know I'm not cool. I know for a fact I'm not cool. But I know that they help guide the conversation, and really they were the ones that told us several years ago, we really need to have like this information not in high school. It needs to start in early middle school or late elementary school. So they've really helped guide the conversation on if the messaging's spot on, and then they're advocates in their own community. We have a small initiative called the Marijuana Free Zone, and we had a little contest, and the kids went out and put Marijuana Free Zone stickers on everything. And my favorite one is one, but somebody put it on their baby brother's diaper. So there's a little one Marijuana Free Zone on this little baby's butt. It's so cute. And it's a very powerful thing, because that child should have a marijuana free life. And, you know, so yeah, they've been very impactful.
Secondhand smoke and whatever else.
Right. Very impactful.
Any other cool tips you have from youth as far as what messaging is cool since we're not cool?
Well, I always ask when I'm talking to kids, what they want to be called, because I've heard kiddos and that offends me, but they're like, I don't care. Like, some of them like, so you just have to ask. I think that's the key, is whoever you're talking to, ask that you're identifying them as who they want to be identified with. There was a big campaign here because
I thought teens, people use the word teens, and I thought that doesn't work because your brain is still growing in college and you don't consider yourself a teen.
So adolescence was a word that I heard that they liked, or young adults. But I mean, if you're educating an eighth grader, that's very different than a 20 year old. I mean, any points to think about. And then there was a campaign here that was legislated by the School of Public Health, and they did several focus groups on what they call it. Because in Colorado, we call it marijuana, which in some communities can be a polarizing word. We don't call it cannabis mostly because that is what the marijuana industry is used, because to kind of make it into a softer version.
Yeah, make it things. You know what? I heard that too from people who for drug driving. And when they surveyed kids and tried to teach them about drug driving, and they thought, well, it's just marijuana, it's not cannabis, and they didn't realize the difference. Right? So it's like, okay. Well,
and somebody, a bunch of kids recently told me they call it what they use it. Like, so they don't call it. They're like, I'm going to go smoke, or I'm going to go eat, or I'm going to stizzy. I'm going to go take a stizzy, which a stizzy is a type of vape pen. So it's really interesting. So that's something new that I just heard in the past couple of weeks, that they don't call it cannabis. They call it weed and I think if you're talking, most people now finally know what THC is, but kids use a lot of the narrative on how they're using it.
And what's the message that works? Like, I'm thinking promoting protecting your brain. Like, that's the key message. Does that work with kids?
It depends on the child, to be honest. I mean, I talked with a young man years ago. He was the first double lung transplant for vaping. He was vaping THC and nicotine. And he had a twin brother. And his brother's like, well, that happened to Daniel. It's not going to happen to me. So that happened in his own house to his genetically very identical twin brother. And he thought it wasn't going to happen to him. So I think it depends on the kid. And as we know, these kids, teens, adolescents, young adults, whatever, they want science. So they believe the science. So if you spell it out and what it does to the adolescent brain, and if they have a doctor or a trusted adult or a coach or a teacher that comes alongside and says that, that is helpful. We do know that parents matter. Having those conversations with your kids early and often, it matters. It's like a 72% protective factor that your kid will not use marijuana if you have those discussions early and often and lay the groundwork, what your family believes and doesn't believe. And I just see so many parents just throwing up their hands and saying, kids are going to do what they're going to do. Well, that's not true.
Yeah. I've heard scientists even on this show that just trust me, that say, well, I'm going to, let my kids make their own decisions. It's like, all right, but you should guide them. We don't want them to cross the street on a red light. We do give guidance to our kids. And if you tell them, I mean, yes, at the end of the day, they grow up and do what they want. But kids want direction.
They do. And in every angle, I mean, in every lens of their life, they definitely want guardrails. And, they're going to experiment. I just think of when you and I were in high school, there was the experiments, didn't have deadly consequences, most of them.
Right. And even marijuana in my days didn't have deadly consequences, right? Of acute psychosis and accidents and as much damage to the brain because it's a different product.
I gave blood the other day at Mile High Stadium on Monday, and this guy asked me what I did. I'm sitting in the chair and he said, well, what do you do? And I told him, this is Colorado. He's like, ha ha ha, do you have any free samples? And I said, it's not funny. So I just pushed back and I told him about cannabis induced psychosis. I said, I just did a documentary this weekend with a friend and it was all about that. And he said, I had no idea. I'm like, here's my card, look it up. So people don't know. They don't know.
People don't know. And they do. It's funny. I've had that too about samples when I talk about
it. Or was it tainted? It must have been tainted. I'm like, no.
No, I as a physician, I started out this whole arena by being the quote unquote drug dealer as a physician giving the opioid medications, and until I learned from parents that their children have died, and they were the first to really cry out while everybody else was like, oh, well, if you don't give these drugs, then you're not a compassionate doctor. And I really listened to those parents. And then those parents had a really strong voice. And then it's the fentanyl parents. And right now, the fentanyl, you know, victims and parents have a really strong voice. And I see that same voice building up in the marijuana parent victims. So you're right to push back and say that's not funny.
I know. I was so proud of myself. I usually talking about this.
So, all right. So you talk a lot about, you sent me a PowerPoint, which had like the most incredible pictures. I didn't know if like you're going and taking these pictures of these products. But what is a big deal? I mean, right. Most people laugh when you say marijuana and weed, and you just want to be happy.
So, right. We do. I do shop the dispensaries, because our whole team does, because we feel it's really important for people to understand. And we started it out, to be honest, as a media source. And it has been used by media, because every time there was an accidental ingestion on television, you know, there's one every day in some city in or state country from a youth getting accidental gummies. There was always a picture of a marijuana leaf. And I was like, this is not telling the narrative of what we're talking about. This is still perpetuating. So we created this. It was a brainstorm of one of our co-founders, and she created it. And it is very powerful. So it's a great tool for parents. It's a great tool for legislators, and it, especially because they don't know what they don't know. So, my poor family, every time we go to a state,
I'm shopping with mom.
They won't go with me, but it's really interesting to see what's out there and to see, to be honest, what some
people get mad at you that you're taking a picture of.
No. Them. They don't. We actually purchase the products because we want to take the pictures and take them out of the packaging and showcase like the potency. And
all right. You're a customer. You're buying. So what do they care?
But they're very good at what they're doing. And I encourage anyone that wants to learn a little bit more and just really understand what the THC, go in. You don't have to buy anything, but just go in, because those bud tenders will tell you. I mean, they're very passionate about what they do. And then you can understand what the selling and the marketing it looks like. From these, you know, retail people. And it was crazy because some people go to them for medical advice and, you know, what should I use for my sleeping?
Yeah, they do. A lot of them do.
And that's ridiculous. It's like going to Target and saying, I have a slip disc. Can you please help me? I mean, it's the same thing. So, but we have a website called, the website's called www.thcphotos.org. And we have 9 states on there. We're adding states. We added hemp products. So if anyone has any information that they want to share with me or products that they want to get on there, just let me know and I'll be happy to talk to you. But there's pretty egregious products.
We did a study in San Diego. It was interesting. It was done by the prevention group and then later by the sheriff department, where they bought the psychedelics, the magic mushrooms that were being sold right next to a school. And then they tested, like, what are our children buying? And again, the pretty little cartoon, you know, cute little mushroom guy, looks like cool little cookies. And this is way before the CDC did their alert about the Shrooms brand. But we found either nothing or THC or psilocybin or bath salts.
Oh, gosh. Bath salts?
So you don't really know. You have no idea.
No, that's the thing.
What you're buying, right? And so interesting. That should go into your Photoshop.
Yes, I would like that, because I think we do still, I mean, it's hard to get because it's not a commercialized market, and it's supposed to be done in a healing center, the psilocybin. But I think we need to add another lens to that on our website. But there's pretty egregious products, and we bought a little cupcake vape pen in Massachusetts a couple of years ago. And my own daughter at that time, she was like, this doesn't even look like what a high schooler, I mean, this looks like an elementary kid user, you know? And I bought hemp online and didn't really realize, but my daughter was 17 at the time. I have a picture of her holding the package. She went to the mailbox and it looked like an Amazon package. And she's like, Mom, we got an Amazon, you know, and I opened it up and it was so much THC that, you know, there was no childproof packaging. There was no labeling. It just came in a plain manila envelope. And that was hemp that was very intoxicating.
Yeah. Very scary. Now, so the big deal with the product is the potency, the, you know, commercialization, marketing for kids and candies and cartoon characters. We see kind of a tobacco analogy here, no?
We do. I don't have it with me, but there was a memo from RF, the tobacco inner memo years ago that said, what we want to do is create candy-like flavors in nicotine. And I was like, we've gone far beyond that. We have candy.
That's so old, like 1970s. We're better than that now.
Oh, yeah, we can just make products that appeal to kids. And the marketing, I mean, I think I sent you some slides on that. The marketing, you know, you go to Vans, which is a very popular skater store. It was our first stop when my kids were in middle school and elementary.
Oh, yeah, Vans shoes, right?
Yeah. They have THC socks and they have marijuana leaf flowers and on the shoes, and then there's Zoomies. What Zoomies has a smell-proof backpack. And I was like, unless you're a hockey player, who needs a smell-proof backpack? But that's to hide your, you know, the smell from your parents and your teachers. There's crocheted little cannabis plants on Etsy. I mean, you go to any cute little boutique shop, it's like the wine at nine or, you know, those kind of things, tea towels. It's the same for the cannabis. Right. It's being perpetuated.
And this is, again, kind of like opioids were and fentanyl is an American problem. They are not commercializing. They do not have these products in Europe or Portugal or wherever else. Like, oh, they have, you know, marijuana is legal in areas in Europe. It's like, they don't have these things.
No, they don't. It's not a culture that it is here. And you're pushing back. I think that's where a lot of people, you know, that I've talked that are in recovery, that was a big component of becoming sober, was losing that culture. Like, that was who they are. They identified as a stoner. That was kind of who they were and how they were identified in their schools. And so I think that's another mental health issue that we need to identify, is help kids find a place outside of the drug culture. But that's not my expertise, but that's my own personal thought.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about drugs and you talk about, okay, naloxone is, you know, that is very downstream. Yes, everybody needs naloxone. If we go back up there, upstream, it's like, okay, fentanyl, we need buprenorphine and you know, prevention and other ways to have pain treatment without opioids. If we want to go uphill from that, it's marijuana. If we want to go upstream from that, it's mental health. And just like you say, right? I mean, life's hard and you need other coping methods in general to deal with those hardships.
There is. And I think that's something I was at. We're making huge strides in that, Dr. Love, because I was at the high intensity drug trafficking conference 2 weeks ago, and they talked about health promoting relationships. That was the whole thing for 2 days. It was about the mattering science, I matter science, and really meeting people where they are, and the ACEs, the adverse childhood, you know, effects, like all these things. And they were talking about it. If we want to help kids in prevention, we need to address mental health. So I looked at two people. I'm like, am I at the HIDA conference? Like, it was amazing
amazing. You talk to law enforcement officers. It's like they're, and then when we talk about like, what can you do for the drug problem? They don't talk about arrest and let's go after the cartels. They talk about, okay, let's reach people, let's help people. It's amazing.
It is amazing. So I'm really excited that law enforcement and teachers are really understanding that that narrative and that.
Although we do need to go after the cartels, sorry.
We do need to go after the cartels because just because legal marijuana is here does not mean that the black market has disappeared, especially in California, right?
California, Oklahoma. A lot of money laundering of fentanyl through marijuana that's happening.
Well, we were promised in many states that legalized that the opiate crisis would be addressed. And we know for a fact. And
you fake news.
Exactly. Fake news for sure. It has not affected that. And now we know that. So we do believe upstream prevention is really important. Upstream. Yeah. So finding the healthy kids and the substance-free kids and perpetuating that message. And the social norming that not everyone's doing it. I mean, that's really important too, that the kids need to know that.
Absolutely. But it's safer than alcohol. What's your response?
That's I we hear that all the time, and it they both are substances that have addictive qualities. But I've never known anyone that have, you know, any adolescent that's had a psychotic break from having beers or even fireballs. You know, you pass out, you don't become that. So.
Right. And psychosis, you know, if you look at like the data, and you look at psychosis with marijuana and alcohol, they'll show a lot of psychosis in alcohol. But that happens in old people after they've pickled their brain and have, you know, Wernicke's and Korsakoff's psychosis. But in the acute area, we just don't have the data, but we see it every day. We see it in all the mental health visits and admissions of young people, the number, right?
Well, I guess I'd like to ask you what do we need to be collecting more at the hospital level?
Well, two things at the hospital level. I've seen that happen with the opioid prescription epidemic. That first of all, the people collect the data. The data is only as good as what we as doctors enter. So at the beginning, we don't do such a good job. We'll say, oh, person came in with substance use disorder or polysubstance because we're lazy to click more things. And so I think a campaign to improve that data, like write down each thing. Cannabis and methamphetamine and, you know, opioid overdose or whatever, right. And I think, you know, emergency department visits and mental health visits and the associations with that.
Well, it's funny because I broke my wrist like a month ago, and they both ER and my orthopedic, they asked if I use drugs, drink alcohol, and then they asked marijuana. And then
Good
I was
for them.
in Alabama, and they're like, we no one ever asked us that. So I'm like, that should be a standardization, even though it might not be legal in Alabama, but people are using. So, you know, I
Yeah.
think like
I mean, there's a little, we're so, every health form has tobacco, 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 tobacco. Okay. They've
right.
started to maybe add vape, but there's no, I mean, in California, it's just weeds. So people don't even write it down.
Right. Correct. They don't even think. And I've heard that. I have a friend who's an anesthesiologist, and she said, I've had to, like, people wake up during surgery because they haven't told me that they're a THC user, and THC users need a significantly more amount because their pain receptors are, you know, dulled. So
Right.
they don't tell me that. So they've woken up in surgery because I had no idea because they didn't answer those questions honestly. Because
Because they didn't answer,
that's
because they're
tough.
told there is a universal screening, so we won't blame the anesthesiologist, because the anesthesiologists have been trained to ask. And not only that, to before you have any major surgery, to not take any, they just say any herbal or any whatever, so they don't even get into the argument, you know, for at least a couple of weeks before your surgery. So your anesthesia can work better for you. So hopefully that's not on the surgeon and the anesthesiologist for not asking, because they should be asking and instructing. But
And a standardization of pediatric, you know, surveys. When our kids were younger, they had all those questions. Like, they need to make it like make sure that they're asking the right questions, like we talked about earlier.
yeah. What's that conversation when you're talking to kids who use or who don't use?
It's a mix. It's a mix. Like I said yesterday, I polled them, and only I think like 8% had used. But they chose not to use anymore. No one was currently using,
And they're okay, so they're the
so
ones.
they're being exposed to it.
Yeah.
And these are student leaders. I mean, these are our student leaders. But I've talked to other kids. I spoke at a Catholic high school, and you know, they were laughing. Like, you know, they just were like, oh, it's just pot. Like, really? So you just got to find. There's no magic conversation, as we know, as parents or trusted adults or coaches or teachers like to have that conversation. But I do, with my own kids, their mental health was a very important thing for them, you know, for them to protect. And they knew that cannabis, THC, marijuana was could have definitely affected. And they've had friends, they've seen cannabis induced psychosis. We lost a friend in that. And it was devastating. And they also, my daughter lost three friends at the beginning of COVID, and all three out of four of them were heavy marijuana users. So again, anecdotal, but you know.
But it's everybody has these stories, and we do need the data.
Data. And but the data shows it's the number one substance found in Colorado suicides, 10 to 18-year-olds. So
Yeah. And you know what? I copied Colorado, because you have that such robust data, and showed the same thing in San Diego. by far, more than alcohol, more than anything, the number one drug. Back to the safer than alcohol, because I saw on your slides, really interesting slide that I haven't seen before. As far as I would say, that's not safe. It's actually worse than alcohol because it's fat soluble and goes straight to your brain while alcohol doesn't. You know, the psychosis analogy is interesting, but I think the addiction of it so much more also. And you have a slide that showed the time to regular lose from the time that you just try it, an alcohol, have your first beer, to becoming a regular user could be, 2 to 3 years. But from the time that you first start marijuana to becoming a regular user is 2 to 3 months.
Right. So that's when, if you know your child is experimenting, is just starting, you need to have those conversations and you need to talk quickly because that feeds into the addiction thought. Like if a kid's using 2.5 months later regularly, what is that saying? It's a very potent addiction. And they like it for them for a while. And then you just hear that, you have to just keep using to get to baseline. A doctor laid it out in a way I never heard this week. And I thought it was really important to hear that. Like, it makes you feel better, but then you have to keep going and going and going. And then you try other substances or higher THC potency. And that's probably why the opiate use at 19 is directly correlated to THC at 14, because you need to feel.
It's a dopamine surge that you're getting by using it. And then that becomes your baseline. That's just to feel normal. And then if you want to get high, then you need more and more and more. And that's true for any drugs. It's not just a marijuana thing.
Well, and I want to empower people. Like that's why I love One Chance to Grow Up. And I've stayed with them for so many years because we are hand raisers. We are like, we bring attention to the problem, but we try to solve the problem. So THC is not going to be solved in one day. I mean, I heard Carlton Hall, I heard his podcast a couple recently on yours, and he's so great. Like there's more and more people saying what we've been saying, which you've been saying, Drug Free America has been saying. So it's not just reefer madness, quote unquote. It's people that have the science and the data. So we do have a call to action on our website if anyone's interested. And it's just basically asking Congress, or we're going to spread it out however we need to, but asking people to, ban kid-friendly products, limit potency, have warnings, showcase all the ingredients, all. I've realized with policy, the words all or maybe all or all the, there's so many nuances. You have to be very succinct. That's how the hemp, loophole came about, because the words were not very succinct.
Yeah. And I don't know, but I hope that it goes with the current administration's and RFK's mission of make America healthy again and bringing transparency to vaccines, to our food, but why not to the pot products?
Wait, transparency. I mean, we deal with the under 21, space or under 25, but consumers need to be made aware. I joined a cannabis hyperemesis Facebook page a couple years ago on Facebook just to kind of figure out what was going on. And it's heartbreaking. I mean, these people had no idea. So cannabis hyperemesis, I don't know if your listeners are aware, but it's uncontrolled vomiting. And the only thing it can be helped with is cessation of marijuana. And
we call it scromiting.
And I actually just heard a video of that last weekend. A doctor videotaped somebody scromiting. And I was like, oh my God.
It's people are miserable. We see that. I'd say every ER doctor in the country sees that once a day.
Once a day, really. It's all the time.
Yeah. It's very common that people are miserable and people have died from it. So you can't just ignore it. It's not just weed. It's serious. You could get serious electrolyte abnormalities that affect your heart. The ultimate treatment is stopping to use marijuana. But all these patients, 100% of them, are addicted. And so saying just stop is easier said than done. And they've had multiple CAT scans. Some had their appendix or gallbladder out. They're asking for opiates because it's very painful.
It's heartbreaking. And I heard a study, $77,000 is the annual markup or whatever you work up for the traditional CMS patients, because they don't know what it is initially. It could be
right. And so I've never had it. And yeah. And there's education on the medical community part too, like to not give a CAT scan with a lot of radiation. I keep saying these people are going to give themselves cancer from all the CAT scans that they're getting. So patients I see, I say, if you're on the Facebook page, a tip that you want to do is get a copy of your CAT scan and be honest with your doctor and share it with them so they don't keep getting you a CAT scan and another CAT scan where they're like, oh, I don't know what happened to me. Because some, you know, they try to stop and they stop for a while. And then like any other addiction, they take, you know, they use again and it happens again. And it'll be like, oh, well, I didn't use for a long time. And then I started again. And, you know, now you're in the ear with, you know, scromiting. And then, but be honest with your doctor so you don't get another CAT scan. You don't get this radiation to the abdomen is a lot more.
I will put that on there. I put stuff on there all the time. I put our the Colorado state mandated warnings from 1317 on there. CHS is
just,
one of them.
You know, how best to advocate for themselves as a patient because they are hurting and it's a real serious and horrible medical condition. But yeah. And they want opiates. And sometimes, you know, one of the things that we educate is like, do not treat this condition with opiates, because now you're making turning someone with a THC addiction into an opiate addiction. And that's, you know, we don't want that.
No, absolutely. But they just, buyer needs to beware. I mean, a transparency is one of our foundations of our organization. And just, you know, I think that everybody, I mean, doctors, educators, and the marijuana industry all need to be transparent about these products.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what we want. Informed decision making, right? I mean, if you're smoking, you know it's bad for you, right? And you choose to still do it, you do it in the corner. Yeah, but that's good. Legalization, legislation, sorry. You've talked about the harms and your organization. What are the big legislative wins that you've been able to do, not just Colorado, nationwide, that you're proud of?
Yeah. So again, some of them were common sense, or a lot of them started in Colorado because we were the first state is what we're, you know, first state update we used to do, because we got like, again, you couldn't spray on the THC. It had to be part of the manufacturing process. Childproof packaging. Some of them, Dr. Lev, are so common sense. You wouldn't think, like the THC universal symbol. We got that in a session early on. I think it was in 2015. And then we had to fight. So the THC symbol that's on every product, but or every packaging, but we in Colorado and One Chance really fought for it to get on the product, because people were being accidental ingestions. They didn't know they were eating jelly beans that had THC. So if it can be marked, even a brownie, it will be marked. So in Colorado, but that's become best practice in many states. We've shopped in Massachusetts and saw that. So that was a big win that actually had national ramifications on marking the product and the packaging. We've tried to limit THC, and that's been really difficult because we know that the profits are in the high THC products. 93% of the products in the most established markets in Oregon, Washington, and Colorado, 93% are over 15%. So you are hard pressed to find low dosing marijuana. So we know that the profits are in the high THC. And then 1317, like I said, it got this mandatory resource. So people are educated on what THC is and the ramifications. It talks about addiction. It talks about a serving size, which is kind of random. So it's like a little pin dot. So that's what a serving size of a high THC concentrate. But that used to be when people had dabs, which they had to light up with a rig. But now again, it's always evolving. The technology, you now can dab in a pen. You can use a vape pen that can get you just as high as this whole very convoluted dab rig. So it's constantly keeping up with that. And then we just think that, you know, potency would be the biggest thing that we could do either in Colorado or nationally, limit potency and not have these high potency products, because that's where the problem's lying. You don't see people getting psychosis with 5% THC. Most, right. There has been some issues. But
packaging, marketing, childproof. Right.
Yeah, so one of my favorite stories is Mike Tyson has his cannabis brand, and it's an ear, because remember he bit off Evander Holyfield's ear, so it's an ear. But that cannot be sold in Colorado because of One Chance to Grow Up. There's not a whole lot of levity.
And why is that? Because of the marketing?
Because it can't be in the shape of any body part. So you can't have a smiley face, you can't have a hand, you can't have a foot, you can't have an ear, you can't have anything that says fruit on it here in Colorado, but that's not the case in other states. It cannot be in the shape of a fruit or an animal. So gummy bears are now illegal. The marketing can't have any.
Gummy bears illegal in Colorado?
Yeah, their gummies are legal, but gummy bears you cannot get. Mm-hmm. You can get gummies, but they're just squares. They can't be in the shape of a bear.
Yeah.
Or a reindeer or whatever.
Right.
And then it was interesting. Florida has done a really good job with their medical marketing, because their medical marijuana is in black and white packaging, or it was a couple years ago. And it's not very child friendly looking. A kid wouldn't want to open it. But when you have something that looks like, candy, why wouldn't a kid ingest it? Because it looks like candy. Well, so
I mean, that's what kids do. They just put things in their mouth. They don't even know why. It's just it's a reflex.
Right. it looks or tastes like fish oil.
Which is why we have all the, probably not the age range that you reach out to, but these are the kids, under 5 who get into their, usually mom number one, dad number two, gummies number one, candies number two, and end up in the emergency department with encephalopathy, right? And their eyes are rolling back in their head. They're in the ICU. Some of them stop breathing on a ventilator from getting into mom's gummy.
Well, and that's something we've talked about. That's one of our education. You can start education. Just like when my kids were younger, you would ask somebody if they have guns in their house, and if so, are they stored safely? Like, that's a question you can ask when somebody's going on a play date. Do you have marijuana in your house? And if so, is it stored safely? So safe storage is really important. And also advise, just like we tell teach your kids what a stop sign looks like, teach your kid what a TH symbol looks like, and not to take anything from anybody else. Like, it's...
Right. But these are kids. These like 5-year-old, they're not, they can't defend themselves. They're too young. But I like that as far as, the play date, protection.
I mean, you could,
because we hear, and you see this too, school, your kids are go to school, and then, ambulances come and take several children to the hospital from school.
That's in the news almost every single day. We've stopped posting it all on our socials because we're like, that's the same story, but it's in Texas.
Oh, keep posting it. Keep posting, because people forget. Oh, guess it's not happening anymore.
And we do. We send it to the legislators in those states and say, you got to do something.
Posting, because if it's not in the news, then it's not a problem.
True. People need to be hit in the head over and over.
Yeah. Right. Failures. You mentioned, what is it?
South Dakota.
Any other fail? I feel like California has been a failure. We've tried warning labels. We've tried candy bans. We tried products on the labeling medications, so adults know not to take a THC with their blood thinners. We've tried, all these things. And I feel like we failed, that the industry is way too strong. But
it is hard. But we've had wins in there. Hermosa Beach, we got that. They wanted it to bring it into, so it's been more on the smaller scale. But and unfortunately, it goes back to data. We know that California did not, and maybe it's getting better, but did not collect data from the get-go. So it's hard to push back on something.
But we had all the data for the pediatric poisonings. We had that data. I thought, okay, we have data. We couldn't do warning labels. We have the data on all the babies. And who doesn't want to help babies from end up in the ICU, right? So we had that data, still failed.
And I don't know why we have to have it in candy. I mean, when you look at these products, I'm like, why?
Why
do you need candy? 40 different flavors.
Have all your adult use you want, but don't put it in a candy.
Right. Or have all those flavors in vape pens. Like, do it like that if you want to. Like, and what's really struggling sometimes is what's happening in nicotine. So a lot of those vape flavors are banned in nicotine, but they are all available.
Yeah, I kind of laugh when people were like celebrating, oh, look at all these tobacco bans that we did. And it's like, that's not the issue of the day.
I do think, I mean, I like I said, South Dakota was kind of a bust for us. We've done some work with other people, but because we've usually been invited by another coalition partner or another local organization that can help push out the messaging. So that's the key. Even though we're a national organization, you need local voices to get it. You know, when Cory Booker, we had some of his constituents when he was working on a bill with Chuck Schumer. We reached out to both their offices, and they listened to their constituents. They listened to us, and they put some of those precautions into the bill. But and there's a lot going on with marijuana in DC. There's decriminalization, making it legal. There's rescheduling. And there's the hemp bill, there's the safe banking, there's a lot of legislative stuff that is kind of all, and it gets really confusing to all of us. Yeah. Where should you spend your time and money and efforts on? So we really believe that hemp might be an opportunity to close some of these major loopholes and actually affect the adult use regulation as well.
Right. So any state can reach out to you if they wanted help in some bill?
Absolutely. Yeah. I met a woman this week and she said, can you come down and speak? You know, we're a nonprofit. We're funded by some very great foundations. We do not take any marijuana revenue. So that kind of lends us to be able to do message how we want to and talk where we need to talk. So yeah, please reach out.
And advice, you know, you just mentioned the confusing things that are happening federally. But if you gave advice on federal, you know, regulation, legalization, banking, what would it be?
Well, again, safeguards need to be in place. Like, again, we don't get in the politics of legalization, but we do know that commercialization is damaging to our kids. We do know that more commercialization, perception of harm goes down and youth use rates go up. Mm-hmm. So if your state decides to, you know, legalize, make sure you get local control. Most of the counties and cities here in Colorado have opted out of commercialization. No one ever tells that story because the big cities have. And Colorado Springs just did after almost 15 years. So it's a perception that everybody's using it. Everybody's legal. It's great for everybody. It's bringing in so much money. It's not. Marijuana revenue last year was 0.68% of our state budget, and we're struggling with our state budget. And then many doctors have said the social use or the medical and the social costs are $3 to $5 for every dollar of that revenue. So I think, and from a federal standpoint, just we need safeguards for our kids. We can't just legalize something and without any safeguards, without any medical safeguards, without any legislative and regulatory safeguards.
So, right. And you can't promise to have that happen later.
Right.
Because they do. They all say, oh, yeah, let's legalize and then we'll do the protections later. I think that's what California did. And then they have basically people who are running the cannabis industry influencing the protection. So it's not.
There's a great book. I don't think
real protection doesn't happen.
Absolutely. But there's a great book. I don't think I have it here, but it's. It talks about that. Like the cannabis industry should not be at the table in any of this decision-making. It should be doctors. It should be doctors and prevention people. So you and I should be at the table and not.
Right. And recovery people.
And recovery people and treatment people. Right. I mean, it should not be, it's like the, you know, the fox in the hen house. It should not be at the table, but safeguards are really important. And I think another thing that we want to make sure is people, we did exactly California and Colorado. We were always catching up to this. So you can start legalizing. If you choose to legalize or decriminalize or commercialize, you can take where California and Colorado have done a lot of the good stuff ahead of time and protect. Don't start where we started.
Yeah, right? learn from our mistakes, right? That's what helped with Florida's last campaign, right? And we'll see what happens again this year.
Absolutely. So I think that's really important to know and reach out. I mean, we all are happy to share our stories and narratives and impacted parents. And we know that impacted parents change the policy. I mean, science has to be backed up, but when people share their stories, I've interviewed probably 20 people that have lost children or their kids are permanently in psychosis.
Yeah, that was the saddest podcast I ever did. I gave them a voice. And it, yeah, it was very sad. Any final words of advice, wisdom?
No, thank you for what you're doing. I love that you give a platform to so many people to push out the message. And I want to encourage, like I said, parents and people to get involved in policy. I've seen it change. I mean, it's hard to see it done in DC, but man, on the local and state level, you can see champions and find your champions and, you know, have them help represent what you, protecting our kids and giving them that one chance to grow up and protecting that one chance to grow up.
That's awesome. Julie Dreifald, One Chance to Grow Up. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Ronnie. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where you learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support of our sponsor. A sincere and warm thank you to FAF, Families Against Fentanyl. Visit familiesagainstfentanyl.org to learn more. High Truths producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I am your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more High Truths.